Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Forgotten Conservative. It is, what are we here, June 1st, at the time of this recording. A lot going on in the news. Our Republican field for the 2024 nomination is starting to near a conclusion. Pence and the New Jersey Zeppelin, also known as Fat Ass Chris Krispy Kreme Christie, both are set or scheduled, rumored, to be announcing their candidacies next week. DeSantis, I believe, has wrapped up his brief tour in Iowa, which is the first of the primaries. It's a caucus state. And a lot of people don't remember, by the way, I think it was 2020 or 2016. I think it may have been 2020. The Democrats, because of the way the caucus is done, basically town halls, little independent town halls all over the state, and people get up and make their claim for their candidate, and they try to coax or coerce people to vote for their candidate. And then all these individual, let's say, town halls or precincts send their results to a central location for the tabulations and totals. Well, the Democrats wanted to use an app, and it was days and days before we knew who the actual winner was. But, you know, with a lot of, like the DeSantis launch, you know, that people, some say failed or glitched or however you choose to look at it, nobody mentions or remembers that failure from the Democrats and their app launch for the Iowa caucus, also the app for illegal immigration, that's been devised by the Department of Homeland Security, and it's the excuse on the government giving these illegal aliens brand new cell phones. And so that's their argument. We've created an app for this, that, or the other, but, you know, they're coming over here, and we need to make sure that they have the app, they know how to use it, so we give them a cell phone, and we give them instructions on the app. Nevertheless, so the only quote-unquote big name, so to speak, basically yet to announce would be New Hampshire's, I think it's Chris Sununu. The only reason he's a political player, his father, John Sununu, longtime Rhino Republican, establishment Republican, he falls right in line. He's quintessential Bushies, Karl Rove, Mitch McConnell. He's that side of the Republican Party. He is what, if you're quote unquote conservative, he's basically the antithesis of what a conservative is in the within the Republican Party. They are the reason why we are where we're at, as much as the actual far left progressive Marxist kooksters that we've been battling for the last 100 years plus. So, which I want to get to, I plan to get to, hopefully I will later on in the podcast, but I'm sure DeSantis is going to meet with Sununu, which brings me to something. You've got probably, you'll probably end up with 10 or so Republicans vying for this nomination. 2016, I think there was 14 or 15, I think, was the total. A lot of times, there's reasons behind the scenes why people get into the ring. I would say probably at least 50% of the time, these candidates know unequivocally ahead of time that they have zero chance of gaining the nomination. And that goes for both parties. It goes for third parties. What you would want to do, theoretically, if you're serious, if you're a serious presidential candidate, is move the argument back to your philosophies, your principles. Somebody like Mike Huckabee, Newt Gingrich. Now, I don't think Huckabee really thought he had a great chance of becoming the nominee. I think Gingrich fully believed he had an opportunity and a chance to do so in 2012. But nevertheless, these are the type of people with, say, Gingrich in 2012, you know, Romney ends up gaining the nomination, okay? So the rule of thumb is, in the primary, you run as a Republican, you campaign in the primaries far right, okay? That, not the pejorative euphemism far right that we're basically all labeled, which is equivalent far right to the left, is equal to deplorables, the great unwashed, etc. So that's how you campaign in primary and debate, is right of center, far right of center. Once you get to the general, then you start edging back towards the center. Okay, well, if you run in the primary to the right, but then in the general to the center, what does that in essence mean? Okay, how do you get from the right side to the center? Well, you have to go to the left, okay? Which is why our failed candidates, and even our failed presidents on the Republican side, have done so poorly and have not really stopped and pushed back and won back lost territory over at least since Reagan, okay? Because these guys are already starting out very close to the center. So Gingrich or a Huckabee, people like, or back in the day, Pat Buchanan, early 90s, and I think maybe he ran again in 96. But these guys enter the race as serious candidates, not necessarily believing they have a chance to win, but to pull the argument back towards the right, to force that eventual nominee to get to the right and then hopefully stay to the right as they go into the general. Okay, so a lot of times that's the motivation. More often than not, and this is where that 50% of the time comes in, these guys they get into the debate for one or two real reasons, and it could be a combination of both. But number one, you can always have that introduction, not necessarily title, but if you're on TV, if you do guest appearances, analyses, things of that nature, you will always be able to have that label or tag, former presidential candidate, former Republican or Democrat presidential candidate. And trust me, that's the type of egos that, you know, not necessarily naysaying ego per se as a general rule, because in order to achieve high office or even to run, you have to have an ego. Okay, that's inherent in high political office, even local political office. But nevertheless, the other reason is that if you look at the 2020 election, a lot of those candidates from the Democrat side end up becoming administration officials, department heads, secretaries. So like you've got Pete Buttigieg, for Department of Transportation. Okay. He could have been a serious candidate, but I don't think necessarily that he thought he really had a chance, but this was him stepping on the ladder and climbing up to the top of the political Democrat circles. Kamala Harris, probably the worst, arguably the worst politician to run for president in a very, very long time, has had zero chance. In fact, I think she was the first one to officially drop out. Okay, but she had her job already, and as a senator from California, so she had that to fall back on. But she knew that, it being a black woman, that it was very likely that if the Democrat candidate, whoever it ended up, would, that she would parlay that failed presidential run into a cabinet position and, you know, potentially VP. Although early on, you wouldn't have thought it because of the way presidential politics and vice president selections usually play out. But Biden had already said at some point early in the primaries that if he were the nominee, he was going to be looking at a black woman for vice president. So there you go. The other 50%, which I do not include somebody like Krispy Kreme Christie in that area. I really don't look at Larry Elder, talk show host. I mean, he opposed Gavin Newsom during Newsom's recall. Okay. I've always liked Larry Elder. He's a black radio talk show host. He lives in California. Why? I don't know, but I don't really think he sees himself as having a real opportunity to win the nomination. Can he move that conversation further to the right? Absolutely. Does he potentially look at a administration official, maybe secretary of some sort, department head? Absolutely. I think you would put Larry Elder in that camp. Christie, I know in 2016, he was hopeful that if Trump were elected, that he would be attorney general. He has come out against Trump, but, you know, I mean, I cannot stand Christie. I absolutely despise the man. But if you're in his shoes, why not get back into the ring? You've got no chance of winning, fat ass, okay? But at this point, Trump is pissing off more people left and right. Who's he going to have left to serve it if he wins? Which, again, I don't think he'll be on the ticket. I don't think he'll be on the ballot. And number two, I don't think he'll win. I don't think he'll have a chance in hell of winning. Okay, but nevertheless, if you're Christie and all you do is sit around and eat Twinkies all day and be a fake conservative Republican, well, you're bound and determined to get something in the administration. So, but I think that's, and also, just as a side note, my personal quasi belief on the New Jersey Zeppelin, it was very convenient that Christie single-handedly took out Marco Rubio in 2016. Okay? When the debates came with Hillary Clinton, fat ass was the one that helped Trump do debate prep. Now, Are the two situations related? Who knows? Who knows? But I just, like I said, I despise Christie. He's not a serious candidate. And as of right now, you've basically, you've got Trump, DeSantis, Pence, when he declares. I think Sununu can make waves if he so chooses. He could be a spoiler like Kasich was in 2016. For instance, I don't know that I've ever seen a Republican politician go on The View and not have it be a contentious segment or two segments, whatever it is. I've never seen it. Okay. Chris Sununu went on there and he talks a very good game. Very good game. But he's a rhino. That's what rhinos do. You cannot appeal to, especially nowadays, you cannot appeal to the crazy, kooky, progressive, Marxist, Democrat wing of the party. You can't. And I'll give you a perfect example, which kind of segues into cultural issues or social issues, etc. Okay, the LA Dodgers, they have, everybody's doing this Pride Month shit. Okay, so be it, fair enough. Your businesses, your choice, you do whatever you want. Okay, but the Dodgers invited a group, disinvited the group, and then re-invited the group. So this was a group, I believe drag queens, that didn't just dress up in drag, they dressed up as nuns, Catholic nuns, drag queens. They are just, let's just say, sacrilegious, okay? Drag queens dressed up as nuns. I mean, just the sound of it indicates how wrong that is. All right? So the Dodgers invite them. There's backlash, complaints, you know, talk of a potential boycott. And the Dodgers said, hey, we reconsidered, and they will not be invited. And then, of course, all of that side complain and bitch and moan. And so the Dodgers said, okay, we changed our minds again, a.k.a. John Kerry, who allegedly served in Vietnam. I voted for the bill before I voted against it. That guy. Okay. And so you've had a few baseball players speak out about it. You had one in Toronto, Anthony Bass. And he tweeted about Target, Bud Light. I don't think he actually talked about the Dodger incident. I didn't see the tweet. I've just heard the backlash. And so all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose. Everybody's pissed off about this dude. The Toronto Blue Jays issues a statement. The guy's field manager issues a statement. I mean, this is the worst thing in the history of man. This pitcher basically agreeing with the Target and the Bud Light boycott, so on and so forth. Well, then he turns into the biggest pussy this side of the Mississippi. Excuse my language. But that's exactly what he turned into. A pussy and a coward. And he goes back and has this just ridiculous bullshit apology, retraction. And it's like you've got the conviction to feel the way you do, and then you say it, and then out of whatever motivation, you get up there and you kiss their asses, apologize, show remorse, look like the biggest pussy, you know, that just acquiesces to the first sign of bullying. Give me your lunch money, Anthony Bass. Okay, give me your per diem. And guess what? He thinks it's going to make it all better. But does that make it better? No, he's booed. There's calls for him to quit. There's calls for the Blue Jays to fire him. There's calls for a shakeup within the organization for not taking stronger actions against the man. So when all of these politicians for all of history sit there and kiss ass to the woke progressive Marxists of the Democrat Party and think you're going to ride the fence, toe the line, play the middle, it never works. It never works. And that's who Chris Sununu is. That's who fat ass Krispy Kreme Christie is. What's the guy from Asa Hutchins, former governor of Arkansas? He can't even get support within his own state. So there's no way you could consider him a serious candidate. He's certainly not going to push the conversation right. He's an effing rhino. But that's why these culture wars are so important. Because by having rhinos elected to these offices and never pushing back, that's how we have arrived at walking into a Target and you don't see the cash register, you don't see the little concession stand, you see a full outright display of LGBT, QWERTY, trans merchandise, etc. from toddlers on up. And some of the most ridiculous items on sale. But because they have slowly pushed, just casually pushed, kept pushing, and rhino Republicans kept saying, well, I'm not a social warrior hawk. You know, I'm of the mindset live and let live. I want to be a financial conservative. You know, I want to be a military conservative. I don't want to be a social conservative. Okay, and it goes back to another old expression. What happens in my house or what happens behind closed doors is my business. And for years and years and years, a lot of Republicans looked at the gay issue, which is where this started, and said, you know, look, we don't care what you do. I used to make the argument and equivalate, is that right? Is that a word? Or compare the gay agenda the same way as a lot of organized religion. Not a lot, some. In that, you know, we all have, you know, I do have my faith and my own ways of practicing it, okay? I don't need somebody coming up to the door, you know, on odd hours, or some bombastic dude in the checkout line, you know, talking about the end is near, you know, repent. It's not that I find it offensive, I just find it inappropriate. Now, to sit there and witness or to have a conversation, that's different. I'm not in no way talking about somebody who's witnessing in a consensual way, okay? And most of those types of people, if you say, hey man, you know, I gave at the office, no thank you, most of those people leave well enough alone, turn the other way. Okay? Same thing with the gays. Okay? If that's what you practice, that's what you practice. I don't care. I just don't want it thrown in my face. Okay? And that was the attitude I took. And if it came up, and somebody was zealously trying to sell me about the woes of gays and the lack of quote unquote rights, then I tried to say, hey, look, man, none of my business. Okay? You know that old saying, what happens behind closed doors stays behind closed doors? Well, guess what? You're not keeping it behind closed doors, because I'm not going to debate you unless you keep pushing me. Okay? And then inevitably, some, you know, it would end up with some guy saying, well, you've got more rights than I do because you're heterosexual. Okay? Name me one right that I have that you don't, asshole. Okay? This is what you wanted. You picked a fight. So name me one right that I have as a heterosexual male that you don't as a homosexual male. Well, I can't marry a man. Well, guess what, dipshit? You can't marry a man and you're gay. I can't marry a man and I'm not gay. Well, no. You had one task. Name a right that I have that you don't. Thanks. See you later. Go figure it out. Okay? And usually if it got to that point, that's where it ended. But because people would just as soon sit there and listen to it or feel guilty about it and didn't view it and push back on it, it's went from the mid-90s, early 90s, with Clinton saying, don't ask, don't tell, and then the Defense of Marriage Act, to 2008, Obama saying he was against homosexual marriage. Marriage, he believed, was between a sanctimonious, a righteous bond institution between a man and a woman. To 4 years later, when the decision was to start peeling back the appeal to the white voter, primarily the male white voter, and start bringing in these disparate groups, quote unquote, evolved into believe all of a sudden that two men or two women or a man and a dolphin could suddenly marry. And it was okay because his principles had evolved. No, okay, that's horse pucky and everybody knew it. To now, you walk into a Target and you see transgender everywhere. We've got a month of pride. We've got a federal holiday, okay? Now, Target can do whatever they want to, just like Bud Light. Do whatever you want to. I haven't shopped at Target in 20 years. I went there, I think, twice to Target to buy one item specifically. And that was a Dean Martin CD, the Essential Dean Martin, like 30 songs on it. I bought it. I was actually there with my first wife, against my will, no less. But so I bought that CD. A few years later, I got in a car accident. The CD was... Anyway... So I had to go back to Target to buy the same CD because this was before Amazon, all that stuff. So other than that, I have not been inside of a Target. I don't drink at home, period. But when I did, I was not a Bud Light consumer. So even if I were a Bud Light consumer, would I continue to buy it? I don't know. But that's my choice. These groups, corporations, athletic organizations, they have every right to do what they want to do. I have every right as a consumer to purchase your product, to view a baseball game, etc. I choose not to. That's my personal belief. That's why social issues are so important. DeSantis' fight with Disney. Disney has for years subliminally put messages in some of their movies, and then had a faux outrage, and you know, fired some person or a group of people responsible. But at least the last 30 years, they've been moving slowly and slowly further to the left. And now, because they have a certain number of employees that are outspoken for gay rights, transgender, whatever it is, Disney jumps into the battle. And DeSantis says, no, you're not going to take our money and then use that money to go against what our parents and grandparents want for their kids and grandkids. You're not going to do it. And of course, then he not only is attacked by the far left, now in this campaign, he's attacked from the right. Well, let's rephrase that. Not from the right, but from Republicans proclaiming to either concede on social right, social issues, either flat out concede those to the left, either, or, you know, try to negotiate, try to come to a compromise with the Kooksters, or just flat out say, it's none of my business. And as a small government conservative, I'm not getting into that fray, which is was the angle that Pence took. So, but it's again, like I said last podcast, low-hanging fruit. The popular adage with a lot of Republicans back, especially during the Clinton years, was, I consider myself socially moderate or socially liberal and fiscally or militarily conservative. Okay, that was their way of playing it in the middle, and that's why I've always said, you know, if you're a moderate, if you are in the middle, then you don't know what you believe. You're wishy-washy. You're Charlie Brown. Okay? And there's few, very, very few exceptions to that. Primarily, when you talk about social issues, cultural issues, and why it's important, regardless of the candidate, and, you know, I've made it clear I'm a DeSantis supporter. So this is in no way in defense of him. This is how I view social and cultural issues. Okay. During the founding, the founders and the framers knew that slavery was wrong, an abomination. As for one human being to own another, as Lincoln commonly referred to it, to for one man to eat from the sweat of another man's brow. Okay, so although they knew at the time they could not form this union, they could not become a sovereign nation of united territories at the time, eventually states, that they had to pick around the edges, and they had to leave the issue of slavery to a future Congress, a future president, a future generation, but that they believed that a moral society would not continue to put up with slavery because it was inherently wrong. And part of the reasoning, part of, I guess, was number one, okay, they were all well-educated, whether it be formally or self-educated men, well-read, philosophers, the Bible, things of that nature. So they all studied history. So they knew that a moral and just society, a civilized society, could not permanently endure such an egregious sin as slavery. Okay? So that's how this country was founded. That we're going to give the future generation, we're going to give them everything, all the tools they need to abolish slavery. But we've got to be united. We have to form the country first. And as I have always said about my father in dealing with familial issues, to know when to pick and choose his battles. Okay? And that's in essence what the founders and the framers did in regard to slavery. I think it was John Adams that talked about if we don't have a moral society, we will cease to exist. You know, Washington had references to God as far as being, if we fail to be a godly nation, we fail to be a nation. Of course, that's paraphrased on both of those. But the point is, it was common. So you had those social and cultural issues there at the founding, okay? That's the fundamentals. That's the foundation. That is the grout, the mortar that holds this country together. That's why social issues are so important. One of the first things that the progressives started doing, turn of the last century, late 1890s, early 1900s, into and through Woodrow Wilson's administration, was to start trying to get God out of the classroom, to overtake and reshape public education, government-funded education. Those were some of the first things the progressive movement started to either abolish or to reshape under their narrative and into their direction, their philosophies, that progressive philosophy. That primarily that foundation is built on who cares what's happened in the past, who cares about history, we're smarter than that group of people. Whereas a true conservative, not one of these fat-ass Krispy Kreme Christie or Sununu, or Asa Hutchinson or Larry Hogan of Maryland, which I haven't heard whether or not he's getting in. He's another establishment rhino. But as a conservative, you want to conserve what has come before you. And by and large, you stand on the previous generation's shoulders to help in your fight to conserve. Okay? You don't turn your nose up at the past or try to rewrite history as is so often done in today's education system. From the early, you know, pre-K, kindergarten on up. And that's their goal, is to tear down what the past stood for, the true history of this nation, philosophy, whatever you want to discuss. They try to tear it down and or they try to discount it and say those people didn't know what they're talking about. They didn't have the knowledge. They didn't have the technology that we do, and the ability to think, because we've made so much progress, but they fail that singular fundamental realization that without those past thinkers, philosophers, founders, framers, past heroes, generations. Without all of those people, you wouldn't be where you are today. You are only where you are because of those people. Which, you know, is, I mean, the global warming deal. Ultimately, I can't say this enough. In my opinion, not only are they whacked out and kooked, you know, just off the rockers, okay, but the leaders of this movement, the top, the higher echelon, it's first and foremost about population control, degrowth, regressive. When you look at their attacks on the energy sector, when you start talking about removing gas stoves, and see, all that evolves. First, it was just an idea. Then, it was more than an idea, but it was primarily going to be focused on new restaurants, not new homeowners, you know, not Lowe's and Home Depot for your house. That would not be touched. Well, guess what happened right after that? They said, well, the reason that we want to ban gas stoves is because of the inherent danger to children. We didn't have electric stoves, as far as I knew, early on. All we had was gas. I could be wrong on that, but it doesn't matter. We've had gas stoves since we've had stoves. The gas doesn't leak. Why do you think Hank Hill put a smell into propane? Because naturally, inherently, it's odorless. So Hank Hill single-handedly put a distinct odor into propane, so if it does leak, you smell it. Why do you think carbon monoxide is so dangerous? Because there's no odor. Okay? So all of a sudden here, over the course of a couple years, now they're seriously looking to ban all future sales of gas stoves. Same with cars in California. I believe their target year is 2030. No more sales of a vehicle with a combustion engine, and I believe it's 2030. Could be a little bit later than that. But it's my understanding it's a done deal. That's why cultural issues are so fundamentally important, because it ties the society together, and it keeps us glued to when these ridiculous things come up. We don't just turn the other cheek and say, oh, that'll never happen. Because it's they don't, just like with Anthony Bass, the player from the Toronto Blue Jays. He apologized in the worst possible way. I mean, I can't think of a more disgusting, just ridiculous, sad excuse of a man apologizing in my lifetime. I mean, there's been some big ones, most notably Tiger Woods. And I think Tiger Woods was as contritious of a man that I've ever seen. And it was heartfelt and believable. But it wasn't pathetic. It wasn't groveling. It was from the gut and honest. And you could tell this Anthony Bass, he feels he doesn't have a choice. If he wants to keep whatever, I guess, his job or whatever. So, but that's what happens when you don't stand up and be counted and fight for cultural issues. All of a sudden, you wake up one day, you hear on the news, the newspaper, at the water cooler, that not only are they banning gas stoves, but you can't buy, you cannot go anywhere nowadays in a department store or online and be hit with the LGBTQ QWERTY bullshit stuff, merchandise. Again, I don't care. I make my decisions and my choices appropriately. But that's part of the reasons, one of the reasons I'm behind this microphone. This is my action. This is my personal pushback. Trump recently said he would do away with birthright citizenship. I wrote an article, I had a newsletter, 2015, 2016, and I think it was the summer of 2016. There is no such thing as birthright citizenship or anchor babies, as they used to be called. Now you probably, get a firm slap on the wrist for saying that. If not, just canceled, doxed, whatever. But it's not something that Trump could single-handedly do. The birthright citizenship is just like with this debt ceiling thing. The left uses the 14th Amendment to further their argument. This, to my knowledge, when I researched at the time of that article, summer of 2016, it was almost kind of a overlooked. If you come into the country, you had a baby, then it was, considered citizen. But the 60s, I think, is when the Social Security Administration got involved and started issuing Social Security numbers. So as long as you had a birth certificate. So here we are 60 years later, roughly, and Trump, is going to do this primarily, I guess, by executive order. Well, hypothetically, just for the sake of this argument, this topic, if Trump's elected and signs that executive order in day one, January 20th, 2025, it'll be in federal court within 2 weeks, because the left will freak out and go to that judge in the strip mall in Hawaii, there next to the mom and pop laundromat, and file a motion to cease and desist or whatever injunction. And because this is in the 14th Amendment, well, by God, they've got an argument. So, I get why Trump brings it up, but it's not going to fly. But there again, because we've overlooked the immigration issue, and just let things continue to slide. Because originally, immigration, illegal aliens, that was a cultural issue. Because it does affect our culture. 95% of the time, these illegal aliens do not assimilate. So it does affect the culture. Now, fast forward to this dumbass in the White House, who coincidentally fell today. I think it was at the U.S. Air Force graduation. Just took a nosedive. Bam! And then couldn't get up. He looked like a boxer, fell backwards on his ass a second time. And my first thought, as whoever it is trying to help the old you know, his daughter carcass up off the stage. Is they better be careful. They're liable to break a damn arm. But nevertheless, back to immigration, it's went from a cultural issue. Now it's a national security issue. So that's what happens when you turn the other cheek and don't pay attention to cultural issues. And you take the sides of these rhinos for whatever motivation or reasoning that they eschew. And this is where it ends up. Right here where we're at today. And so instead of stopping it as it ebbs and flows, as it slowly moves along, chugging up the hill, now it's on the downside of the hill. Now that little engine that could has crested the top of the hill and is going down full steam. And we've got to be like, I think that was a Johnny Cash song. Hank 3 did a cover. The wreck of old 97, I believe it was. But, you know, the train was late in the song. The engineer floored it, firing up the coal, getting that steam built up, the pressure, went around a curve and derailed, killed the engineer. His hand was on the whistle, and that's how they found him. Burnt to a crisp. That's what we have to do now. Now we have to derail the train as it's built up speed going downhill instead of stopping it as it was chugging, struggling to get up over the hill. And it's obvious to anybody with any common sense that it's a lot easier to stop it before it gets to this point than to now say, okay, we've had enough. It doesn't mean it's impossible. Look at Bud Light. Look at Target. Look at how much money market share they've lost. And we're making a difference. But you know, this is what we come to. That's why, again, you can't turn your back and ignore cultural issues. That doesn't mean that you pick fights. But in your way, whatever you, just like I said 2 years ago when I started this podcast, figure out your way to fight back. Figure out your way to pass on the inheritance of liberty and freedom, individual, national sovereignty. Because we're losing more and more of it every single day. This debt deal, you know, they voted, passed it in the House last night, and people are crying on both sides of the aisle. Used to be when you would have both sides speaking out negatively against a bill like this, then you would have these faux intelligentsia types. Well, let's see, if they're facing major disgruntlement and disagreement from both sides of the aisles, well, there must be something good about the bill. That's my perception. Horse pucky. Stick that up your ass, Mr. Intelligentsia elite. Okay? Nevertheless, I would have voted for it. I would have pushed the issue. We still have, you know, Janet Yellen, all the naysayers, the doomsdayers, said June 1st, June 1st, June 5th, June 5th. We could have pushed this out another month or two. Easy. Okay? They didn't. They voted. I think McCarthy did as well as, not only as well as expected for somebody in this position, but he's done better than anybody in the past for the last 25 years, dating back to Newt Gingrich. Still, I wouldn't have voted for it. But you got these guys on the right beating their chests, some calling for McCarthy's ouster. Okay? And they're all, and it reminds me of the Aesop fable, the ass and his shadow. And if you remember, this traveler, this dude, basically rents an ass, a donkey. And so he's riding the donkey, and the donkey's handler is walking alongside, guiding them on this journey. Well, there's no trees around, it's flat land, and the sun's beating down. And so the guy, the handler, the owner, the one that's walking, says, "Hey man, we gotta stop. I gotta take a rest. I'm walking. Okay, I'm dying over here." And so the traveler who rented the donkey's like, "Okay, I could use a rest too." Well, the guy that owns the donkey sits down in the shadow cast by the donkey. Okay? Well, the guy who rented the donkey, he says, "Wait a minute. I paid for this daggum donkey. That's my ass." And so they started arguing, got up, and then they started fighting. Well, what happens? The ass, the donkey, rears up on his hind legs, and then now there's no shadow. Okay? And so the moral of the story was something like, you get caught up in the shadows and you forget the substance. And that's all this ridiculous grandstanding is doing about this debt deal. What needs to be done are simple things like passing the RAINS Act, where government agencies are sunsetted, advocating and fighting for Article 5 Convention of States, to where the people can have a chance. Washington is not going to fix itself. Politicians in Washington have corrupted the system and led us down to where we are today. You can't expect the current or any future crop of Washingtonian politicians to stop the federal Leviathan. Stop the federal Leviathan and reverse course. It's not going to happen. That's why Article 5 Convention of States would be the easiest way for the people of this country to take it back and put it back in the hands of the people. Take it from Washington, D.C. and return power to states and local governments and municipalities. And you don't hear any of them talking about it. Very rare do you hear a Washingtonian politician discuss Article 5 Convention of States. And that's what's needed. That's basically right now, all these debate talks, even primary issues. Okay, in fact, speaking of primary, I think Ron DeSantis over the weekend endorsed Article 5 Convention of States. Don't quote me on it, but that's what should be discussed. That should be in the Republican primaries, debates. That topic alone should be discussed ad nauseum. And we'll see if it does. So, anyway, we are out of time. Thanks for playing along and joining us here on The Forgotten Conservative.